My guest today needs no introduction. As Israel's longest-serving prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu has served the country and people he loves for his entire adult life. He was the first prime minister to have been born in Israel after it declared independence in 1948, and he proudly served from 1967 to 1972 in the elite special forces unit of the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, known as the unit. A graduate of MIT, he was appointed as Israel's ambassador to the UN from 1984 to 1988, and then was elected to parliament as a member of the Likud party in 1988, launching his resilient political career. He served as prime minister from 1996 to 1999 and from 2009 to 2021. He has worked with three U.S. presidents and led the brokering of one of the most groundbreaking peace agreements with four of Israel's Arab neighbors in the historic Abraham Accords in 2020. Being a non-political organization, the fellowship has enjoyed 40 years of working with various governments across the political spectrum and have enjoyed a long working relationship with governments led by Prime Minister Netanyahu in the areas of Aliyah, helping Jews immigrate to Israel from around the world, poverty, and security. And we look forward to continuing that relationship with Prime Minister Netanyahu in the months and years ahead. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, welcome to the podcast. I am so honored that you're spending your precious time talking to me and our listeners.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being with you. I think the story of Israel is a parable for humanity, for all the nations, because, you know, if the Jewish people could come back from the dead, if we could reconstitute our life in our ancient homeland after which we established 3,500 years ago, Jerusalem was declared our capital by King David 3,000 years ago. And we clung to our land and finally lost it after a succession of empires conquered it, ultimately dispossessed us. And we were flung to the far corners of the earth, yet generation after generation, Jews prayed, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Jerusalem. And finally, in an effort that defies imagination and defies history, we came back. Rebuilt our national life and our independence in our ancient homeland, the land of Israel, turned Israel into a power among the nations, the startup nation, a powerful nation that is able to defend itself and became the bastion of Western civilization, of Judeo-Christian civilization in the heart of the Middle East. The transformation of Israel under successive governments that I led from a semi-socialist economy to a free market economy, from an isolated country to a country that accomplished four historic peace agreements with four Arab countries recently. That says that if Israel, if the Jewish people can ford this raging river between virtual annihilation and salvation, then there's hope for all humanity, for all people. And I think that's what people glean in Israel, the inspiration of the realization of frankly, a biblical prophecy, the ingathering of the exiles, the rebirth of Israel.
I love how you started your answer referring to Ezekiel's the dry bones that came to life prophecy and integrated the ingathering of the nations of the Jewish people from all four corners of the earth. You alluded to many of the peace agreements, and you've had so many different relationships, both with three American presidents and world leaders, all with very different personalities. Could you tell us a little bit about your secret of how you somehow managed to get along, inspire, and create effective strategic relationships with such diverse leaders?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that the alliance between America and Israel is first an alliance between peoples. The overwhelming majority of Americans see in Israel really a forward bastion, really, of Western civilization in the heart of the Middle East. And they see it not merely in terms of national interests, but is in terms of common interests, common values. This is the original promised land. America was created as the new promised land, the new Jerusalem. Well, I'm speaking to you from the original Jerusalem right now from our Knesset, our parliament. And that is something that creates a bond that is above and below everything. It is the connecting glue. And so when I had arguments, and I did, I had differences of opinions with American presidents, that's inevitable. But it, as we say, it was arguments in the mishpocha. That means in the family. You know, you have arguments in your family, right? You do. But it's in the family. And you, it doesn't shatter these powerful bonds. So there have been periods of disagreement, areas of disagreement. But there is an area of agreement, of a common bond of values and also of interest. Israel provides enormous intelligence to America. It saved many American lives. And by the way, the lives of the citizens of many nations against terrorist attacks, dozens and dozens of terrorist attacks. And Israel also is the bulwark in the Middle East that prevents Iran that chants death to Israel and death to America. We're the small Satan in their way to the great Satan, which is the United States. So Israel holds the Middle East together. Without Israel, the Middle East would have collapsed to Iranian aggression. So there is a bond of values and a bond of interest. And Americans and American presidents recognize that. And that's how you overcome things.
Beautiful. World leaders are people too, with real relationships, but a deeper interest that's not only for yourself, but for your entire country. And every relationship is deeply rooted in that. Of all the people that you've met and different leaders, individuals that you have experienced and been on their turf as prime minister, do you have any really funny memories or really fun memories that maybe could relate to that, Mr. Prime Minister, with the deeply rooted values of doing what's best for your country, but also just on a human level, having fun and enjoying?
You know, each person is different, and I'm different too. And so you have to, and we're not people without egos. So you have to, sometimes you step on other people's turf, on other people's egos. You know, I'm generally very courteous, and I can be very firm, but I like to be civil. But that doesn't mean that you don't have these events. But I think that I've been fortunate to have as my guide some great leaders who are no longer with us. And perhaps the most, one of them is my own father, who was a great historian of the Jewish people. And I've also guided by my older brother, who fell while leading the perhaps the most daring rescue operation of hostages in modern times, the historic raid on Entebbe, where Israeli forces rescued in the heart of Africa 103 Jewish hostages from German and Palestinian terrorists. And that certainly inspired me. But if you ask me who are the two leaders in modern times who inspired me most, well, everybody says Churchill. I'm a big Churchill fan. But really the one that inspired me most was our modern Moses, the man who, like Moses, opened the gates, opened the idea of a Jewish state for the Jewish people. It was Theodor Herzl, who 120 some years ago envisioned the Jewish state when people thought he was mad. And he said that the Jewish people have to come out of bondage. The modern Egypt was Europe that was going to be overtaken by the forces of anti-Semitism, Nazism. He saw that in his mind's eye. And he said, there's only one solution. We have to create a Jewish state as a safe haven for millions of Jews. Well, Herzl died too early. He died when he was 44 in 1904. And so the Holocaust that he predicted would happen did happen. But somehow we had created enough of a bridgehead in our ancestral homeland to be able to take in the remnants after this horrible mass murder, and created what is now ranked as the eighth most powerful state in the world. And we're 0.1% of the world's population. And yet the University of Pennsylvania annually surveys 17,000 people, opinion leaders in 20 countries, and they consistently rank tiny Israel as the eighth most powerful country in the world. Now that, you know, you can explain that. You can explain that with a lot of things, our ingenuity, our innovations, our incredibly courageous army. But I think it goes deeper than that. I think it's our faith, our confidence that we are realizing the dream of ages, and that we're bonded by this, by the rebirth, this miraculous rebirth of the Jewish state, And that we're not going to let anyone, not least these Ayatollahs, to bring this to an end. They may come to an end, we won't.
Amazing. And I love the piece of data that you brought in, that we are one of the most powerful, because I think coupled with the other statistic that I love, that we're also one of the happiest people, is a real key to everything that you've been saying about when you're deeply rooted in faith and values and survival and both having that human connection, that brotherhood, that mishpacha, as you reference, but also being very not losing sight of the larger picture, that we are fighting for our survival every day. It leads to a life of purpose. So both we're powerful and influential, and we're also happy people. So I think that together is what inspired me to make Aliyah 16 years ago. So amazing. All the different dmuyot, all the different hats that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wears came out in many different ways. And one of them that I loved, what you referenced, was to your father, just being a son in admiration of his father. What do you think your father, what advice do you think your father would tell you if he was alive today?
Well, he gave me a lot of advice, not political advice. We never discussed concrete politics, ever. Mm. It wasn't as if I'd said, well, you know, I have to build a coalition, which I do now, right now as we speak. Took a break from that. What political moves? None of that. But he did speak of history. And I once asked him, well, you know, I told him I intend to run for prime minister. And so I asked him, because he was a great historian of the Jewish people and a great historian period. I asked him, well, what do you think, father, is the most important quality that a prime minister of Israel should have? And he asked me, well, what do you think? And I said, you have to have a clear vision of what you want to achieve for the country. And you have to have both the resoluteness to pursue it, but also the flexibility to navigate through the shoals and rapids of political life. And he said, well, that's true of any leader. If you're a dean of a university, or if you're a head of a company, or even a military leader, they'd give the same answer. And so I said, so what is it that you think is important? I asked him. And he answered with one word that initially stunned me, because I thought, well, you know, that's what he said. He said, what you have to have is a broad and deep education. And when he said that, he meant that you not only have to be grounded in economic affairs or military affairs, but you really need to have three things that you have to know. It's history, history, and history. Because if you don't understand how we got here, you're not going to understand how we go forward. But in our case, history, history, history begins with three words: Bible, Bible, Bible. Because there's no meaning to the Jewish people without the Bible. There's no meaning to our future without our past. And I think that's what my father instilled in me and in my older brother and my younger brother, for that matter, too. It is the Jewish heritage, the heritage of the Bible, that informs everything that we're doing today in the modern world. We're in Theodor Herzl, our modern Moses, wrote a book which he called Old New Land. We're an old land, we're an ancient people, thousands of years old, and yet we seize the future. And it's the combination, it's the roots and the branches that make Israel so unique and such an inspiring model for millions and millions of people around the world.
Amazing. As I mentioned earlier in the introduction, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews has had the incredible honor and privilege of working with the Israeli government on behalf of the Jewish people. Can you tell us how you would describe the impact of the fellowship on Israel and the Jewish people, and the importance of this strategic partner of Christian friends?
Well, I think all help is welcomed and deeply appreciated, and I value that enormously. But I value it even more as an expression of solidarity. And many of the Christian supporters of Israel probably don't know how far back Christian Zionism and Evangelical Zionism actually preceded modern Jewish Zionism. I mean, it's instructive that when Herzl, this visionary who wrote this other, his seminal book, which was a very short volume called The Jewish State, it's 100 pages, and he wrote it in 1896, and he said that's the only solution for the Jewish people, is to go back to their ancestral home and build their own state. When he wrote that, people thought he was mad. And he died 8 years later. That's all, 8 years later. But he started a tremendous movement. That movement was supported by evangelical Christians, believing Christians who were already there for centuries, who were there especially in the 19th century, especially but not exclusively in the United States, actually the United States and Britain. Our modern Moses Theodor Herzl died at the age of 44, having launched the Jewish National Movement a mere 8 years earlier. He was supported by Christian believers from around the world. The only person that his family allowed to come in effectively to his deathbed was a Christian minister. It was that strong a bond. So Christian Zionism preceded Jewish Zionism. And in the course of the birth of Israel, the rise of Israel, and modern Israel, we have not had better friends than our Christian friends around the world. And they are a powerful force in America, in Europe, in Brazil, in Africa, in Korea, and elsewhere. I mean, it's a tremendous partnership, which I deeply, deeply value.
Amazing to see the Christian support for Israel and the knowledge that Christian support for Israel isn't a given, that we have a lot of investment in next generation in order to continue to engage and inspire them to continue to see this love and support and commitment to standing with Israel and the Jewish people, just like they have, like you pointed out, Mr. Prime Minister, even before the Jewish Zionists with Herzl and at the First Congress, of course, there were 10 Christian Zionists there. So I'm wondering, do you have any advice as the leader of Israel, the visionary and someone who deeply understands both Israel, the Jewish people, and also our Christian friends and allies, how we can engage the next generation of Christians to have them be as inspired and passionate about standing shoulder to shoulder with their Jewish brothers and sisters as their parents and grandparents?
Well, I think the best thing is to get them to come here, because once they come here, they're astounded, because all the places they read in the Old Testament, in the Gospels, I mean, it's real places. They're here. It all happened here. I'm about a kilometer away, less than a mile away, maybe, from the Temple Mount, where Jesus turned the money tables of the tables of the money changers. Nazareth and Bethlehem are right here. These are real places. The Sea of Galilee, real places. And when they come here and they see where Christianity originated from, the common roots with Judaism, that bond is strengthened. So number one, if you can come here and walk in the footsteps of Jesus, that is no small experience if you're a Christian. I think my Christian friends they're astounded when they come here. And they're also quite surprised when I think they're familiar with the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, but they're surprised that I'm familiar with the Christian Bible. I mean, right. With the story of Jesus and the Gospels and the whole thing. I mean, for me, I like to send them to places where they actually walk in the footsteps of Jesus, in places that are categorical, that he was there. There's no question about it. we know that for a fact. So it's just coming here and discovering this old new land that has so many common roots with the people in America and elsewhere around the world. I think that's the best connection that I could offer.
Incredible. So we're getting towards the end. I want to ask one more question before we ask the final question. Can you share with me one memory? I know you've stood with him since he started the fellowship and really recognizing and appreciating this friendship and this fellowship that he created. Could you share one memory that you have with my father?
Well, I remember when he told me what his plans were. He was a real visionary. And I respect visionaries. I've lived among them and I propel my own vision. But he said with great confidence, you know, we can expand this partnership and get practical aid when Israel needed it most. And he said, you know, this will be a worldwide movement. And I remember that I thought, here's a man of vision. Here's a man infused by purpose. And he proved it. And you're proving it. And the people who are listening to us are proving it. But I was inspired by this vision. And it turned out to be, You know, if you have a vision, you'll realize it. If you don't have a vision, you'll do nothing. If you want, to live a life of purpose, which I think many in your audience do, and perhaps all of them do, then seek a purpose outside yourself. Seek something bigger than yourself. And that will enrich your life in ways that are unimaginable.
There is so much more that we can talk about, but we do realize that your time is limited. So before you go, I would like to end with a question that I ask all of my guests. And that is, if you can share with us a scripture that's your go-to verse for encouragement and inspiration.
Well, you know, I end my book with a phrase from Samuel 2. I think it's in the book, second book of Samuel, that says, I'll try to translate it. I think it's a bad translation, but I'll do my best from the original Hebrew. It's that is the eternity of Israel shall not falter, which means that the people of Israel live despite the Holocaust, the pogroms, the exiles, the displacements, the horrors that were directed against our people. The ancient prophecies materialized. We came back to our land, reestablish our one and only Jewish state, turned it into an amazing dream realized. And it tells me that that sentence, that phrase in Samuel was right. It didn't falter. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Mr. Prime Minister, for your time. And I know that I speak for all of my audience and all of us at the Fellowship in wishing you the very best and lots of success in all of your endeavors.
Thank you. And thank you to all my friends, all our Christian friends around the world. Come to Israel. I'd love to see you. If I can,
thank you so much.
I'll see each and every one of you. If I can't, I'm seeing you now. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Conversations with Yael podcast. If you like what you have heard, please check out my weekly podcast, Nourish Your Biblical Roots, that explores the Jewish roots of the Christian faith with inspirational and ancient teachings. You can also visit me at mybiblicalroots.org for more of my teachings, videos, blogs, and books. Follow me on Instagram at Yael_Eckstein or on Facebook at Yael Eckstein. Shalom and see you next month.